Welcome back to Hope, the podcast for those who are grieving the loss of suicide. I'm Sherry Lynn, and I'm here with John. And this week, we wanted to talk about self-care after a loss. We wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping to let you know a few things. Sometimes in our podcast, you are going to hear dogs barking. Sometimes you may hear my children running around. And this is because we're just a little mom and pop podcast, and that's okay with us.
Very, 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 very grassroots.
We try to edit most of it out, but sometimes you may hear a few dogs here and there, a few little kids here and there, but we try our best, and that's all we can do. So this week, we're going to talk about self-care, and that's a really important topic, because sometimes after we lose somebody, we forget actually how to take care of ourselves. And John and I are going to talk about a couple different thoughts and how to take care of ourselves and how we took care of ourselves or how we didn't take care of ourselves very well after our losses. So I'm going to start with you, John. When you first lost Zach, what did you do to give yourself self-care?
I think one of the things, the difference is you get tired and the line gets very foggy. It's not a very defined line between wanting to do self-care, not having the energy to do self-care, not caring about self-care because there's other things to worry about. That's where I was more, I didn't have time. My mind was elsewhere and I did it because I had to do it to go to this appointment or this meeting or that meeting or see this doctor or that doctor. It actually did not bring me any joy to do it. It was almost like another, oh, I gotta do this now before we went and did something.
But a lot of the appointments aren't fun appointments either. It's not like you're going, oh yeah, I'm gonna go get a massage and relax. Now I have to go take my loved one to an appointment or I have to go to an appointment because of all of the stress that we're going through right now.
Oh yeah, it was all about, you know, doctor's appointments, funeral appointments, after the funeral. It just never ended. So everything was at the beginning, and for a long time, everything was so much about what happened. Stuff that you enjoy doing was like, no, I really don't want to do this. If I don't have to do it today, I'm not going to do it. I really don't care to do it. That's the way it's going to be.
So lots of people have different levels of self-care after they lose somebody. Things that they're willing to do, things that they can't do. And some people, self-care is getting out of your bed and having a shower that day because that's where you are emotionally and mentally. And if you can do that, then sometimes that's your version of self-care for that day. Some people it's, okay, now I'm going to go back to work today. And how am I going to tackle that? And what's that going to look like? Because I need an income and it's a necessity of survival. So some people get in survival mode and that's how they do self-care too, is I need to work. Need to make money and this will help me survive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there was a lot of days where when my wife was in hospital and Paige was at school or whatever, I was like, I'm gonna go downstairs, I'm still in my pajamas, I'm gonna grab a coffee, I'm gonna go back upstairs. And that was it until my daughter came home from school, where I gotta kind of pull it together so that you don't freak out your kid because you're still in the same clothes that you were in this morning or yesterday morning or 3 days ago. And how about dragging a comb across your head? Maybe brush your teeth so you don't look like a homeless person, you know, because your daughter's already worrying about what's going on. It's tough. It's tough. And then you do what you can. And sometimes that's not a lot.
And that's true. I remember when my dad passed away, he knew that I was super stressed about him taking his life. He knew that that was just an overwhelming stress and I was just scared. I was scared every day I was going to get a phone call that he wasn't alive and I didn't know how to process that at 19. I didn't know how to work through that. So he made an appointment for me to go see a counselor and it happened to be somebody he used to see. So obviously he liked her enough and it was booked for a week after his death. So I don't think he didn't have a plan in that moment. It just happened to be. That was the day that was the last straw for him. So he booked this appointment, which I'm eternally grateful to him for taking care of me in that sense, because he knew the anguish that I was going through in that moment. And I'm not so sure that I would have reached out to go to a counselor because the people around me in my life at that time, the adults around me at that time, did not have the tools in their life to guide me in the right direction either. So I would have just kind of circled around without getting the self-care and the self-help that I did need. So I am thankful to my dad because he was looking out for me in that sense that I needed help. But I grew a lot over the next year and a half with that counselor as a person through grief. And she gave me different lessons that I needed to learn each week to grow and to stand up for myself and to stop being in a situation where I needed to put boundaries up, where people were maybe they didn't have my best interests at heart. And I needed to stand up for me and for what I needed in that moment and stop worrying about what everybody else needed in that moment.
Oh, for sure. One of the biggest things for me was isolation. There was some of the most comforting moments in that horrible time was the fact that I would just sit in my garage by myself, smoke and drink either coffee or something else until my daughter came home. And not having to deal with people, not having to deal with phone calls, not seeing anybody, just being by myself was some of the most easiest moments that I could acquire with very little effort.
So do you think that you put your self-care last beyond everybody else in your family?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what would you do for other people that you wouldn't do for yourself?
Just the basic necessities. Food, laundry, made sure everybody had what they needed at whatever given time. Once everybody else was done, it was down tools. I couldn't care about anything. If it wasn't for my parents making sure I had food, I wouldn't drink.
Drink what?
I made sure I had that.
Right.
Oh yeah, that was the bad part of stuff.
So do you think that was something that you did that was not helpful?
Well, it depends. It was at the time I thought it was helpful. At the time it was a very unhealthy coping skill, and I was fortunate that it didn't take hold as a long-term, full-time thing. Did it get me through some dark moments? Yes. Did it create some dark moments? Probably. It did. It was part of the journey. Was I proud of it? No. Do I acknowledge that I did it? Yeah. Do I understand if people do it? Yeah, I do. But it doesn't go under the healthy part of it.
Okay. I remember being at university and my counselor that I was going to would asked me how much I was drinking or what I was doing. And I kind of just said, like, I'd go out on weekends with friends. And she said to me, that's an issue. And I thought, well, why? That's what everybody else does. Like, that's what all university students do. It makes sense, right? And she said, well, that's how people develop drinking issues or drinking problems in university. And then it kind of continues afterwards. So I kind of took her advice and decided to stop drinking in university. And I had to figure out other ways to socialize with people because that's what a lot of my friends were doing. And then I had to change my whole lifestyle to be on a path of self-care and taking guidance from her and moving forward with it and putting boundaries up. Something I've talked about before is I did a lot of exercising, not because physically I was trying to do anything more than just clear my head. That's all I needed to do was go to the gym, work out my anger that I had, clear my head, work through my grief. And that was one of my biggest ways I could work through my grief daily. I didn't have there's not a lot of people at 19 and 20 who are going to be able to relate to the experience that you're going through. Or there's not even a lot of 40-year-olds who can relate to the experience I was going through when I tried to talk to other adults in my life. They just couldn't understand. They didn't have the words to express. They didn't have any similar situations. So it was very isolating. So working out every day was what helped me function. And it also became an obsession though too, right? Like just like someone drinks alcohol, somebody becomes obsessed with working out. And I definitely became obsessed with working out. It ran my whole life. And that also wasn't good either because if I missed a day, I didn't know how I was going to cope that day.
Yeah, there's a moment that everything is extremes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one way or the other, extreme and not getting out of bed, extreme and not leaving your house, extreme and overeating, extreme with undereating, extreme with drinking, extreme with whatever. It's
finding balance.
It's fine. Everything in your life is so unbalanced. Everything has been tossed and turned upside down every which way. There is no balance because everything's been shaken to the core. You know, there's fractures in everything. There's fractures in relationships amongst your family members, with your spouse, with coworkers. There's fractures everywhere. So there is no balance. And you're trying to stay afloat somehow. Anyway.
Did you take work off for a while?
I took a month. I took a month, just over a month off.
I had nobody in my life to tell me that I was allowed to take time off work. I just had zero guidance, and I took a week off work. I didn't know. I didn't have any idea that taking a week off work after your parent dies traumatically, that wasn't normal. Or that was, yeah, it was not normal. I had no idea. But nobody said to me, just so you know, why don't you just take the rest of the summer off before you go to university again? Nobody gave me guidance.
There was no guidance. Yeah.
So I just pushed through, and I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know how to breathe. I didn't know how to do anything. So I just kept going because I didn't know what else to do. I was just lost.
And for some people, that may work for them to go back. But what's important is to convey to the individuals that these are options.
Right.
You know, you can, you know, you want to go back to work? You want to try to go back to work or go back to school or whatever? Sure, try it. But don't feel and don't beat yourself up because you can't.
Well, in hindsight, I wish I didn't. In hindsight, if somebody gave me guidance and told me, I didn't know that there was the option. I just didn't have any idea. But I think looking at options of, hey, is work going to work for me or is it going to be counterintuitive for me to go back to work right now? I think those are good things. And not to feel guilty about taking time off work too. That's important because you need to take care of yourself and you need to heal and you need to grow. And then you can focus on your own journey through your grief too. When you're working, you don't have time.
You can't measure yourself against somebody else right now because it's going to cause more harm than good. I think there should be some rewards. I think you should reward yourself and acknowledge if you have been depressed or down and you've been isolating yourself, you know, acknowledge the fact that, yeah, I got up, the little things, took a shower, got some clean clothes, went for a walk, or, you know, just got in the car and drove. If you're able to drive. But even just to be able to get dressed, drive a comb through your hair, brush your teeth, pick up the phone, call somebody, whoever, parent, siblings, friends, just something. And be able to, when you've done that, when you've completed that task, and I'm going to call it a task because it's sometimes it requires a lot of energy to do it, is to acknowledge to yourself and to be easy on yourself and say, hey, you know, wow, I did that today. Today is a check that off on my list. I was able to accomplish that today. And hopefully tomorrow you will do the same thing and maybe add another tiny bit to it. If you don't, you don't. But at least try to add a tiny bit to it.
Well, and even just remembering that grief one day might not be the same as grief a different day. Depends on how did you sleep that night. Maybe you had to do something to do with the funeral, or you had to tie up some ends about going through the process of paying for the funeral or needing going to get death certificates or things like that that can trigger your grief even further. So maybe that day you only have so much left to give to self-care. Where another day, if you don't have those triggers in your day, you might have a lot more to give yourself self-care to. And it's okay that things change from day to day too. Oh, and remember that.
Yeah, because this grief is very fluid. It's evolving. It's fluid. It comes in waves, big waves sometimes, small waves. You don't, at the beginning, you don't, even now, I mean, we're 40 some odd months into when Zach passed, and it's still, yeah, I don't know all the triggers yet. I don't know all the things that are going to bring a tear to my eye or choke me up or whatever. I don't know them because I haven't experienced them all. And then speaking with some people that are way further down the journey than I am, I don't think that they've experienced everything. I think they're much more further apart than they used to be and not realizing or not, you know, or I didn't anticipate this. I don't think I'm there yet. It'll be a while before I'm there yet. And who's to say that what doesn't bother me today won't bother me tomorrow or next month or a year from now?
Well, that's true. That's exactly true. Because you're still going to take that person with you. Their memories, their essence still lives with you forever and ever and ever. And even like I was really young when I got married, I was 22. So that wasn't that far off from when my dad passed away. But I remember refusing to let the day go by without acknowledging that my dad wasn't there and that his presence was wanted and I wanted him because people just didn't want to talk about it. So I made sure when people came in, they signed the guest book. I had written a poem about my dad and I put his picture there. So everybody was forced to see a picture of my dad, to see how meaningful he was in my life and read about him. And then I put him in my speech because a lot of people just didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to talk about that he killed himself. They didn't want to talk about it because it was so taboo, and I refused. That's part of my self-care. And part of my self-care today is being an advocate for mental health. And it's taken years to do that, though. It wasn't just an initial, okay, I'm ready to fight for mental health and the stigma around mental health. It's taken a long time to find my voice, to find, you know, my guidance that I lend to people who are needing guidance too. So I would even say 17 years later, that's my self-care today. So it doesn't end. It still has to continue. It still has to move forward for my heart and my head to be in unison and to be at peace.
Oh, I agree 100%. Just because there's this weird, I don't know where this rule came up or this misconception came up. If we don't mention it, or if we don't talk about the individual, then it's not going to be an issue where nobody's going to think about it. Nobody's going to, like, really? If I'm this devastated, or if I've struggled this hard to get over somebody's passing, just not talking about them is not going to make it easier. Because if that was the case, then we would have just not talked about them in the beginning and not gone through all this grief. But that's unrealistic, because we grieve as we love them. We grieve because we miss them. And one of the biggest fears in speaking with other people that have lost loved ones is the fear of the individual being forgotten because he's not mentioned. There's a lot of times where speaking of the person brings comfort because they're acknowledged that they were here, that they were a big part of our lives and still are, even though they're not here physically, and that they're not going to be, because that was one of the biggest fears my wife had, was that nobody was going to say his name and he was going to be forgotten.
That's really sad.
And really, there's no possible way that something like this will ever leave my mind, that I'm going to forget this young man and what he was in our family.
And your dynamic was really interesting, because you and your wife are grieving a very similar loss, and you have a daughter, and then there are other kids involved too. So there's like a unit that's grieving too,
but
all individually grieving differently too.
That's right.
And all individually needing different self-care tactics.
Yep.
But when my dad died, I was so isolated, so alone. Mm. My mom and my dad were separated. She didn't want to talk about it. She was like, whatever, she was coming at it from a different angle. She's coming at it from, he killed himself, how could he do that to his kids? She wasn't understanding the bigger picture of, this person was struggling, this person's mental health wasn't going well, and unfortunately, this is a really sad situation. So she didn't see the empathy towards him. And it took me years to see the empathy towards him too, because I was so mad. How could you leave me? Well, it wasn't about me. I realized that too. My sister did not want to talk about it. So there I was, very isolated, trying to deal with a lot of emotions, a lot of big things. I owned my dad's house. I owned his car he died in. I owned all these things. I had to take care of and be a big adult all alone. And it was weird, because I didn't have anybody to sit down with and talk. And the only person who wanted to talk to me about it was my grandmother, which was amazing. She was the one person that I could sit down with her and talk about my dad. And she had these beautiful stories about my dad from when he was a kid and when he was a teenager and when he was growing up. And that was like the time I felt peace in my heart, when somebody wanted to have that conversation with me, who held a piece of my dad that I didn't even know, and that I could still learn about my dad even after he passed. So she was kind of the key keeper. That sounds weird, but she's the person that made me feel peace when there wasn't peace.
So your grandmother, who else did she have other people to talk to about your dad?
She talked to her other son, and then unfortunately he passed away from an illness when he was 45.
And this was your dad's brother?
Yeah, so I would go visit him in Quebec. So it was kind of far away to go see him all the time. And he would laugh in the other room, and it was identical. It felt like my dad was in the room. It was amazing, but then he didn't die that long after my dad. So then that piece was gone. And then my grandmother died a year ago. So after everybody keeps passing away in my family, little bits of my dad just kind of keep going with them and going with them and going with them. I have to find different ways to find peace with my dad. And that's okay too. So this is part of it. Doing a podcast, helping other people through their loss is another piece of finding self-care.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's, there's a lot of changes in how what I thought was healthy for me is not so healthy as it turned out. We don't, and then there's the other element or the other dynamic of somebody who becomes a caregiver, which I had kind of taken on the role to help with my wife's well-being and getting better. And one of the pitfalls of being a caregiver is that you don't take care of yourself. You have to realize that you gotta take self-inventory of aches and pains and what's needed to continue to thrive and survive, because if you don't stay healthy and strong or whatever, you're no good to nobody else. And that's, you can tell yourself that a lot of times, but when you're in the midst of it, it's as soon as nobody needed something from you, it was like, the last thing I want to do is take care of myself. I'm packing it in for the night, and that's it. I'll worry about it when I have no choice but to worry about it. That's kind of what the mentality was.
But in reality, you did take care of yourself too. Like, you told me, I believe, that you went to counseling right after Zach passed away too.
Yeah, so I did.
It's not like you buried your head in the sand.
No.
That's still a piece of self-care.
No, I was always going to therapy or things like that. Was not something that was foreign to me. I believe in it. I used it for other issues in life, and it wasn't something that was scary, or I didn't feel that I was better than anybody else going to it, or that I was strong enough that I didn't need it. I found that it was something very, very helpful. I remember that morning getting the news of Zach passing. I think one of the first couple of things after looking around and just seeing how the news was affecting people so quickly and enormity of the situation, I knew I had to find professional help quickly for me, my wife, my family, because it was way bigger than anything I'd experienced. And I was fortunate that I didn't let ego take over.
I think you're really good at that in general in life. You don't let ego take over.
I struggle. I'm not a saint by any means of the imagination. I do ego. I have to keep ego at bay, because there'll be.
But you're conscious of that. We're like a huge portion of society is not.
Well, I have to be cautious, because ego can get you into a lot of trouble. You know, I can't, because of my profession too, I can't let ego take over, because it's not just my safety that's important. It's the safety of my fellow crew members. It's the safety of the general public. I can't let ego take over. Ego plays a part in doing your job, but you need to be able to put it aside and say, hey, you know, I need another opinion on this, or I need some help, or I can't do it all on my own.
For sure. So I want to ask you, what you count by months. Why do you count by months?
I count by months instead of years, because years to me is a smaller number. I count by months because it's a way of, I guess, maybe fooling myself. I look at that number, 40 months. We're going up to 42 months. And I can look back at 42 months ago. Holy cow, 42 months. I never thought I would have made it 42 months. Look how far I've gotten in 42 months. Look at what we've achieved in 42 months. As opposed to, it sounds like a bigger achievement than 3.5 years.
Yeah, I can see that.
3.5 years. 42 months. 42 months seems like a long time compared to 3.5 years. So
3.5 years seems like nothing. Yesterday.
It seems like nothing. 42 months sounds like a bigger 42 months. That's far, you know? So it's...
I like that you count in months, because people keep thinking, when a year's up, I should be at this place of my grieving. I should be doing this. But if you count months, nobody judges in months. Nobody says, in 36 months, I should be here. So it's kind of like you're taking the boundary away.
Sure.
Of that invisible grief, self-grief that we're imposing on ourselves. Yeah. What's the date? Well, people talk about a year. Where should it be at a year? Well, you're taking that away. So you don't have that boundary anymore. And it allows you to grieve endlessly to whatever point you need to. And now, like you said, 42 months, look where I am at 42 months. Yeah. And you're allowed to look back in reflection in the positive, wow, look how far we've come since because that day.
It's important, because we've always said in this journey, never, there is no timelines, there is no measuring stick or distance that you have to be at a certain time. It creates nothing but problems, and it can you end up beating yourself up because of it, because you think you should be here at this time. And because we say that, it's ill-advised to stand there and say, look, in a year or in 12 months or in 2 years, I need to be here looking forward, because we don't know how we're going to deal with this devastation that's been given to us. Okay, so we can't say, yeah, it's great to have a goal, maybe if you want, hope to get to a certain point, but to sit there and say, I have to be here in a year, in 12 months, is self-defeat. It causes more problems than it does good.
Because
if you don't meet it, you end up beating yourself up even more. But if you, wherever you stand, wherever you get to, and you stop for that moment, and you turn around and you look behind you at what time has passed, that is something that you can look at and say, hey, look at where I've gotten in a year, in 6 months, and 12 months, and 8 months, and nine, whatever the distance is, you can look back, and now you can reflect on the journey that you've taken on so far and the distance that you've made so far and say, okay, I can take self-inventory now. This worked, this didn't. What can I change that hasn't been working? This is working really well. As opposed to, you don't know what's ahead, but at least you can turn around and look behind you and say, okay, this is what I've done. This is how far I've come. And wow, I can't believe I've made it this far. Because at the beginning, you wouldn't have thought you were where you are at the beginning.
It's true. When I look back after a year, I kept thinking, because I just kept thinking, oh, I thought I'd be further than now. I thought I'd be further than that. Why is this so painful? And then I went to work on Father's Day. I worked at a golf course. And I remember thinking, I got this. And my dad, the last day I saw my dad was Father's Day, and he died 5 days later. So Father's Day is not my favorite day in the year. It's probably worse than actually the day he died, because that's the last day I saw him. And I went to work on Father's Day, and I thought, what idiot would go to work on this day? I didn't know. I didn't know how big of a trigger it was going to be. And for me, I was such a soldier. I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I didn't want anyone to know I was weak. And I didn't want to show anybody I could be weak and vulnerable, because I didn't like being vulnerable, and I didn't want to cry in front of anybody. And I can't say that I'm still not like that today. I work very hard at working through my emotions in my head, talking about it with close friends without expressing physical emotions, because I just like to be in control of that. And I went to work and I could barely keep it together. And I thought, why the frick did I come to work today? And I made a vow to myself, I will never go to work on Father's Day. And I was a server at the Keg for 15 years. And for 15 years, I chose to book Father's Day off work, because I knew, not that it isn't, Father's Day is not that hard for me anymore. Now I honor my husband and how amazing dad he is to our kids. But I just want to put myself through seeing people with their dads. It just isn't, it's not beneficial to me. So that's a boundary that I learned. The first year I learned it, it was not fun. So I just made that boundary up for myself. Not that I probably could go and do it now and be okay with it, but I do it just in case.
Sure.
Yeah. Self-preservation.
Self-preservation. Yes, we gotta get through this. And am I better now than I was at the beginning? Sure I am. I'm better now. Could I be better? You can always be better. You can always do better. I learned from the mistakes that I made in regards to self-care, on what really wasn't self-care.
In regards to drinking?
In regards to, I drank all kinds of, because it was just easier. It was easier to numb the pain. It was easier to, a moment, you just hope for something, just to take your mind off it, or just take the sting away from the moment for a little bit, just to get reprieved.
Right. But the truth is facing it,
yes,
it's going to be more beneficial in the end,
too. Oh, for sure. I mean, like I said, what I did by no means is a how-to book.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's not like, this is what you need to do. Maybe a how-not-to book, but like I said, I learned from them that they were not, they're what I did at that time. Like I said, I'm not, people will continue to do it. It's not the first time. It's not the last time that it will be done. But did I learn from it? That was the important part. So did I understand why I did it? Absolutely. I understood why I did it. Was it healthy? Absolutely not. It was not healthy. I remember I had a hard time sleeping. Sleeping was a luxury. And, I did. I went to the doctors. I asked, what can I take this? What do you got for me to take? And fortunately, unfortunately, whatever, the stuff that I was given to try, I did not like. It didn't agree with me. I didn't like how it made me feel. And it was never something that I got dependent on. So it was just, I guess, kind of muster through it. And when I was tired enough, I slept. And that's how I left.
Well, I think one thing we should talk about before we finish this podcast up is remembering that a lot of times you are already doing self-care without knowing you're doing self-care, right? Just like John and I talked about getting up, having a shower. You might look at yourself and say, well, I could do that before. Why is this such a struggle for me now? But sometimes getting out of bed, brushing your teeth, having a shower, putting on regular clothes instead of pajamas is self-care. And instead of beating yourself up about it, kind of look for, the gratitude in that and look for
achievement of the day and to acknowledge it. What did I do today? Yesterday I didn't do nothing. Today, I did this.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard when people that are out there, people that are survivors, will understand what we're talking about. How there are these things that seem like an everyday thing. I've done them every day without even thinking about it. How they become such a big part. Why is it such a struggle to do this?
It's part of surviving.
Because you don't really care to do it. You don't really care to do anything. And to get back into the mindset of, I need to do this for me. That's really difficult because
to make yourself important.
Me right now, for me at that time, it's not important.
Yeah.
It really isn't. You really don't care about me. I care about what happened. I care about the person that's gone, not me. And it's hard. It's a hard concept to sell to people that are struggling at the beginning about self-care. It is. And it's not easy. That's why, because it's so difficult and it's such a struggle to do, it's important to acknowledge when it's done.
Right. So just kind of like pat yourself on the back when you do have those moments of growth through your grief, making sure that you are doing those things and trying new things every day to push yourself for self-care.
Yes.
Right. It might, to somebody else, it might not look like a big thing from an outsider looking in, but for you, you know it's a big deal and you know that it's an accomplishment and just be proud of yourself for doing that.
It's work. It's everything. I mean, I said at the beginning of from my first podcast, this is a lot of work. In every single corner that you turn to, it's a lot of work. And who would have ever thought that grabbing a shower or brushing your teeth or combing your hair was going to be... Or feeding yourself. It's going to be
It's a lot of effort.
A lot of effort.
But we want you to know that it is possible.
It's possible. And you...
42 months later, 17 years later.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's possible. So we just want to give you hope. We want to let you know that care about what you're going through. And we are thankful that you're listening. And we hope that this podcast is giving you some sense of relief, some sense of normalcy, and that you continue listening.
That's right. You can do it.
Okay.